May the spirit of life and love be with us in our breathing, in our quiet, in our busyness, and through all the days and nights of our lives. Amen. In the eighth grade, we were assigned a project in social studies. I remember it well. We were to make a poster about some part of our ancestry. I made mine about the story of the migration of my great-grandmother, her husband, and their three children to the United States from Germany in 1930. My great-grandmother, Emma Johanna Jacoba Kranenberg Mell, and you have to roll the R or you're not saying it right, she's an amazing woman. Her husband, Carl, and their three children, Ermelin, Fritz, and Ingrid, my grandmother, they sailed for New York and made their way by train to Eastern Washington State. Carl had fought in the First World War for the Kaiser, and Carl's son, Fritz, was about to be a teenager, and Carl saw the signs. He knew by 1930 that another war was coming. He could tell. So they sold the house and the vineyard, and they left Europe behind. For the poster in eighth grade, I got pictures of the family, pictures of New York in 1930, where they arrived, a map of the route that I drew myself by hand from Hamburg to New York, and a photo of the ship that they sailed on, the St. Louis. So a few years later, when I saw the name of that ship, again, I'm sure it was a history class or something, I remembered. That's the ship that brought my family, part of it. I remembered. I'll share with you the story of that ship. I'm quoting mostly from an official version. On May 13th, 1939, the German transatlantic liner St. Louis sailed from Hamburg, Germany for Havana, Cuba. On board were 937 passengers. Almost all were Jews fleeing the Third Reich. Most were German citizens, some from Eastern Europe, and some were officially stateless. The majority of the Jewish passengers had applied for U.S. visas and had planned to stay in Cuba only until they could enter the United States. I'll summarize the next part of the story. The drama of the arrival in Cuba was complicated, but most of the passengers were denied entry. Negotiations to secure their entry were unsuccessful. The new Cuban president had supported Franco, who had been supported in turn by Hitler, and he, the president, wanted a bribe from the refugees that they were unable to pay. And again, from the official account. Hostility toward immigrants fueled both anti-Semitism and xenophobia. Both agents of Nazi Germany and indigenous right-wing movements hyped the immigrant issue in their publications and demonstrations, claiming that incoming Jews were communists. Reports about the impending voyage fueled a large anti-Semitic demonstration in Havana on May the 8th, 5 days before the St. Louis sailed. The rally, the largest anti-Semitic demonstration in Cuban history, had been sponsored by Grau San Martin, a former Cuban president. Grau spokesman Primito Rodriguez urged Cubans to fight the Jews until the last one is driven out. A few of the passengers were accepted, but 743 of them were not. They went north, sailing so close to Miami that they could see its lights. Some passengers on the St. Louis cabled Franklin Delano Roosevelt asking for refuge. Roosevelt never responded. The State Department and the White House had decided not to take extraordinary measures to permit the refugees to enter the United States. Public opinion in the U.S., although ostensibly sympathetic to the plight of refugees and critical of Hitler's policies, continued to favor immigration restrictions. Roosevelt was not alone in his reluctance to challenge the mood of the nation on the issue. 3 months before the St. Louis sailed, congressional leaders allowed to die in committee a bill that would have admitted 20,000 Jewish children from Germany above the existing quota. So the ship was turned away. The Coast Guard blocked the entry. They sailed back. The official account, which comes from the United States Historical Memorial Museum, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, concludes as follows. Following the U.S. government's refusal to permit the passengers to disembark, The St. Louis sailed back to Europe in June 1939. Jewish organizations negotiated with four European governments to secure entry visas for the passengers. Great Britain took 288, the Netherlands 181, Belgium 214, and 224 found at least temporary refuge in France. Of the 288 passengers admitted by Great Britain, all survived World War II save one, who was killed in an air raid in 1940. Of the 620 passengers who returned to the continent, 87 managed to emigrate before the German invasion of Western Europe in May 1940. 532 St. Louis passengers were trapped when Germany conquered Western Europe. Just over half, 278, survived the Holocaust. The rest, 254, were murdered. Every time I read this account, I weep. Every time. Because my family got on the boat, the same boat, and they took the train, and they lived. So I read this account, and I weep. And I don't know what else to say. I'm going to take every politician and pundit, everyone whose heart has shrunk two sizes too small, I'm going to take them and sit down at a table together. Kitchen table, perhaps, where we sing with joy and with sorrow and we pray of suffering and remorse and give thanks. A kitchen table, we can pray and we can give thanks and recall our own ancestors, and then I'll just read the account of the St. Louis and its passengers, and I'll read it again, and I'll read it again, and I'll read it again until their hearts are opened and their conscience awakes. How dare we? How dare we? Governor Rauner, who's turned out to be more like Ebenezer Scrooge before Christmas Eve than afterwards, joined those others this week who said their states wouldn't take any Syrian refugees. Forget that governors have no such power to make such decisions. Forget that's exactly what ISIS wants, a war of religion. Forget that the terrorists who struck Paris weren't refugees, or that France itself has reaffirmed its commitment to take tens of thousands of migrants. Forget all that. Tell the story. Listen to the voices. Open your heart. Listen to the voices. See the face before you. Last week, a writer named Oliver Willis wrote a tweet that summed this up pretty perfectly. He said, "If only we had a seasonally appropriate story about a Middle Eastern family seeking refuge but being turned away." I planned months ago to preach about immigration today. We're talking about ancestry, and it's almost Thanksgiving, and I thought this is a good time to talk about immigration, seasonal stories about welcoming the stranger, the holy table, around which we learn what it means to be human, what it means to give thanks, what it means to serve one another, to listen to one another, where wars begin and end, and the terrible victory is marked. I planned months ago to preach about immigration today. I thought I'd mostly be talking about immigration reform, about the effort to bring out of the shadows those who are here but without full dignity under the law, about protecting the dreamers, those children brought here by their parents who are without legal status. I thought I would preach about the inhumanity of tearing children from their parents' arms while the parent is deported, which happens in this country this year, not long ago. The family that remains citizens, but left without a mother or a father. I thought I might tell stories about these detention centers run by private companies for profit, places where folks have been convicted of no crime, who have seen no judge or no jury, who at most committed a civil offense in their search for a better life, are held without lawyers, without decent food, without heat or fresh air for months or even years. I thought I might tell stories of the Unitarian Universalists who have fought so hard for immigration justice in Arizona and across the United States, who've stood before the guards, who've blocked the routes of the buses, who've stood before the sheriff and his posse and said, "No, we are one family. No matter where we come from or how brown our skin might be, we're one family, and no more of this, no more." I'm inspired by those stories, and I think you would be too. I thought about how we could talk about our own migration stories. Some of us in this room are migrants. We've come from other places, maybe other countries or just other states. Some have parents or grandparents who were migrants, and you know those stories, and sometimes you don't know those stories. They're lost to us. Some go back generations or before memory. Some of our ancestors migrated here by land or boat tens of thousands of years ago. And some, of course, have ancestors who did not migrate by choice at all, but by force. A story that disrupts our happy narratives of everyone coming for freedom, for some came in chains. But nonetheless, whatever our stories might be, we all have migration stories to tell, often many different stories to tell from all our different ancestors. I will say here that it seems to me, if we want to be fair about it, that it is only those folks whose migration stories predate written history, who were themselves overrun by the Europeans some 500 years ago, who I think get a vote on which migrants we take in now. Seems to me, if we're going to be fair about it, that's the way that I would do it. That's just my own opinion. When I planned this service months ago, I also did think that we could draw the spiritual parallel about how our own lives are migration journeys. Not necessarily physical journeys, but journeys of the heart. Toward, we hope, depth and understanding, a sense of coming home to wherever we are. Come and go with me to that land for which we're bound. The land of the spirit, the land of meaning and joy and service. But then I thought I'd return to the justice theme, that it is for us to speak up for justice, our neighbors near and far, for compassion and mercy and solidarity with one another. I'd call upon you to speak up and vote and agitate and to make personal connections with one another, to listen to those voices and to meet one another where we are. We'd raise money for immigration justice, which we will do, and we'd all leave feeling proud of our faith and recommitted to the work of justice for everyone. We'd enter the Thanksgiving holiday in the right spirit, moved by gratitude for the gifts of our life and committed to share those gifts more generously. The movement from gratitude to generosity, which is at the heart of this season. I thought all that might fit somehow into the sermon, which I scheduled back in the spring, and then the world just keeps on spinning, doesn't it? Thousands upon thousands of refugees fleeing war tumbled across the land and the sea. Little boys laid lifeless on the beach. Some countries closed their doors while others opened their hearts. And then politicians do what politicians do and appeal to the basest instincts, called immigrants rapists and murderers, and saw their poll numbers go up. And this week, terror and fear. Some seek to close the doors. Others try to open their hearts. I want to say, listen to the voices. Open your heart. Tell the stories. I want to say to all those who would close the door, who would be guided by fear instead of hope, who would clutch in scarcity rather than live in generosity, who would say, no, you can't come here. I want to say to you, governor, politician, pundit, I want to say to you, how dare you? For the Lord, your God, is a God of gods and Lord of lords who loves the stranger, providing them with food and clothing. You shall also love the stranger, for you were strangers once too. How dare you? Listen to the voices. See the faces. Open your heart. Lest the tears of the holy drown us all. May we be summoned to a higher calling, one of faithfulness and hospitality and open-hearted love, the best of us and not the worst. Both impulses are in our history and in our present. The colonizing and the nativist, the supremacist, that's part of our history. It always has been. The part that says that difference is scary and there isn't enough, and so it's just for us. It's part of who we are, we who live in this land, a part of our history we have to reckon with. But it's only part of our history and only part of our mythos, our story about ourselves. Another part of our story is the welcome, the table open, the door open, the heart open, the embrace of variety and diversity as quintessentially American, the land of freedom regardless of origin or color or creed, the affirmation that there's plenty. There's plenty. There's enough. Come and be welcome. That's another part of our story. Both parts are part of our story. We have to choose which one we want to make come true. Which one do we want to enact? When you give thanks this week, give thanks for the best of our story. Give thanks for your ancestors and the courage of those who've made journeys, journeys of time and space and journeys of the heart, including yourself. Give thanks that there is plenty. There's enough. Give thanks for hope and love and possibility. Give thanks for love, which despite what you might see on the news is stronger in the end than hate. It is risky to open your door. Hospitality is risk. That's why it matters. There's a choice we make about whether we will be guided by love or fear. And that choice is everything. Give thanks. And from that place of gratitude, open your heart and your door and be a living witness to the spirit of hospitality. Joyful thanksgiving, whose bounty we share. We join in the journey. Come and go with me. Take one more step till there is peace for everyone. When bound to human care and hope, then we are free. In joyful thanksgiving, in awareness of the truth of our own stories, our own contingency and fragility, our own need to be welcomed, our own need to be welcomed, we can see in the faces of one another, we can hear in the voices of one another, the core humanity, our siblings, our family, our neighbor, and say, come, come, whoever you are welcome here. In 1939, the St. Louis never got as far north as the city of New York. They were turned away. I wonder if they had made it so far, if some of the passengers would have looked out across the harbor and seen there that statue, a gift from the people of France, lamp raised. I wonder if they would have made out the words and known the full poem, some of them, those words of Emma Lazarus. 9 years earlier, my ancestors saw that statue, those words applied to them. They were included in its promise. Thus, I live, and so do my children and theirs. It's my prayer this morning that we remember them, those words, a portion of which is etched on that statue. We have a country where those words apply to everyone, not just some, where our hearts are open and our door stands ajar. The poet wrote, not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here, at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. May it be. May it be. May it be. May we give thanks for the gifts of our life, commit to the journey of hospitality, and may it be. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. 3:49, we gather together, a song of thanksgiving. Thank you. Please be seated. It has been wonderful to be together for worship this morning. In your bulletin, there are a set of events and things coming up. I want to let folks know that today at 1:30 at the mosque at Harrison and Mulford is an interfaith vigil for the victims of the most recent terrorist attack in Paris. And I hope that some of you will be able to be present for that event. They had another time and they moved to that one. So if you had another time in your calendar, it's today at 1:30 at the mosque. Today at 2:30 here in this space, we'll in the fellowship hall, we'll have a gathering to remember the life of Billy Whitsitt, member of this congregation for many, many years. Our family and friends gathered together for food and fellowship and storytelling. So if you knew Billy, I hope that you will come along for that. Other events are in your program, and take a look and see what there is there. In a moment, we'll take up an offering to support the work of justice and mercy in the world. And as promised, our work for immigration justice. Justice for Our Neighbors is a program of the United Methodist Church. Christ United Methodist and many people from this congregation have been volunteers and acted there. It's a free immigration law clinic for folks to help them navigate the sometimes Byzantine paperwork that is required to receive benefits and other connections that people are entitled to, but we make it hard. So that clinic does wonderful, amazing work, and I hope that you might be generous this morning in your support. If today was your first day with us, special and hearty welcome. We are so glad you're here. Hope you checked in with Belle on your way in to find out more about how to connect with us at this church. Next week, Mrs. Sanders will be preaching our last and five sermons about ancestry, talking about what to do with some of those stories that we don't want to carry with us. How do we handle that? So we all have some of those, don't we? So you and bring someone you know with you here to worship together for that experience. I'll be preaching in Kansas City on Sunday, Thanksgiving with friends, and preaching there at their church, so I'll bring your greetings to them. We'll take now an offering to support the work of this church, to support the work of Justice for Our Neighbors. The offering will be given and received. I'll extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. While I do that, I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join hands or stand next to the person next to you for our benedictions. Some long arms. The words of our benediction from Paul Robeson: sorrow will one day turn to joy. All that breaks the heart and oppresses the soul will one day give place to peace and understanding, and everyone will be free. May it be so. May it be so. We'll sing together our sung benediction. Go your way in peace. We'll sing it through twice.